Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter. Today is July 11, 1981, and this is my audio letter number 66. A few days ago, on June 29, 1981, the Supreme Court ruled, in effect, that the United States is now in a state of war. That is the real meaning of the Court's 7-2 decision in the case of former CIA agent Philip Agee. The Court declared that the government can revoke the passport of a person who discloses secrets about American spying overseas. The decision was bottomed on the government's right to restrict public speech or press stories about the movement of American troops or sailing dates of American ships. My friends, this governmental power to restrict free speech has always applied only during wartime. So a state of war has now been officially recognized, not by our sleeping Congress, but by the Supreme Court of the United States. And what kind of war is it? It's a secret war, my friends. The Agee decision hands important new powers to the United States government to help in closing down America for the nuclear holocaust to come. By the time this secret war erupts into the open, America will already be on a complete war footing. The secret war, which has just been quietly acknowledged by the Supreme Court, has been raging now for 5 years. It began in the summer of 1976 with a crisis which to this day has never yet been made public officially, the underwater missile crisis. Since then, the secret war has expanded into pre-war nuclear sabotage of the United States, secret space warfare, and intelligence warfare involving techniques which sound unbelievable to many people. Many skirmishes in the secret war have been kept out of the news. Others have been impossible to hide completely, so instead they have been explained away in various ways by government spokesmen and the kept media. But these things, my friends, are becoming harder and harder to hide, because we are inching closer and closer to the brink of all-out war. And as we do so, the incidents are becoming more frequent, more violent, and causing more casualties. In my audio letter reports to you over the years, I have detailed many of these developments as they have happened. I believe you have a right to know, because it's your life and your country that is at stake. For that reason, I must now reveal the greatest tragedy yet in the secret war. My friends, the greatest naval disaster since World War II has now befallen the United States. As yet, there's no hint of this disaster in the news. Part of the reason is that the Pentagon is not yet totally sure what happened. In addition, a frantic effort is underway to construct a believable cover story, which will save the Pentagon officials from mass dismissals and disgrace. Their secret war games caused the disaster. Whenever the cover story is decided upon and released, the plan is to pretend that the disaster has freshly happened at that time. That will be a lie. The final act in this twin naval catastrophe took place, ironically, on American Independence Day, July 4, 1981. Not one but two United States naval vessels have been destroyed in the secret catastrophe. I will not give the names of these naval vessels right now, out of respect for the next of kin of their crews. It's only right to let the next of kin be notified before the names of the vessels are made public. For the same reason, I will not divulge the types of vessels involved at this time. But I can tell you that two different types of naval combatants were involved in the double tragedy. The remains of the two American naval vessels are resting on the bottom of the Norwegian Sea between Iceland and Norway. The navigational coordinates of the larger ship are 68 degrees, 56 minutes, 24 seconds north, 1 degree, 6 minutes, 40 seconds east. The smaller vessel is to the east of that in two pieces, one piece about 30 miles away, the other some 40 miles beyond that. My friends, I cannot say how long the Pentagon will keep quiet about this tragedy. One thing is for sure, though, they will keep quiet for as long as they can. Only a few months ago, on April 9, an American submarine sank a Japanese tanker, supposedly by ramming it. And what did the United States government do? The submarine departed without any effort to save the survivors as the ship sank. Then the United States government did not even report the incident to Japan for a day and a half. It was only because the Japanese knew themselves about the sinking that the United States admitted it. Even then, the Navy issued a report about the incident that is full of holes. But this time, my friends, both vessels which have been sunk are United States vessels, so there is no telling how long the silence will last. We are now on a timetable for Nuclear War I that is aiming for mid-1982, about 1 year from now. Whether that timetable will be speeded up or slowed down by events, I cannot predict. But I will continue for as long as I can to let you know what you need to know in order to understand our headlong rush toward war. My three special topics this month are Topic number 1, the Israeli practice raid for nuclear Armageddon. Topic number 2, America's launch-on-warning plan for nuclear suicide. And Topic number 3, what you can do during America's final days. Topic number 1. To the north and west of the Persian Gulf, there lies a land whose ancient origins are lost in the mists of time. It's the land between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates, the cradle of civilization. Tradition has it that the Garden of Eden was in this area, and in fact the Book of Genesis even mentions the Euphrates as one of its boundaries. Later, we're told that the Tower of Babel was located in the same area, spawning the ancient historical city of Babylon. Elsewhere in that same area, the famous city of Nineveh also rose and flourished, becoming the center of the Assyrian Empire. All those things took place long before the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ, but centuries after His coming, the glory of the land between the rivers rose again. Those were the days of the Muslim Saracen Empire of the Caliphs. By around 800 AD, the empire of Caliph Harun al-Rashid was huge. It encompassed all of Arabia, Persia, Egypt, Syria, North Africa, and parts of what is now southern Russia. The home of the Saracen Empire was that same rich land between the Tigris and Euphrates. And the jewel at its very center was a magnificent city. The capital city of the ancient caliphs was built from scratch for that purpose starting in 762 AD, and what a city it was! By all accounts, the court of the caliphs was the most magnificent the world has ever seen. The palace was so huge that more than 80,000 servants lived and worked within it. Gold, silver, and precious stones were turned into ornaments of unparalleled beauty by craftsmen educated in the highly advanced science of the day. In the Hall of Audience there stood a famous tree of gold, and on the branches of the tree, says tradition, there were perched birds of gold and silver, studded with precious stones. The birds were music boxes, and they fluttered their mechanical wings as they poured forth intricate songs. Outside the palace, the city was arranged in expanding circles, with a system of three walls at the outer boundary. The city quickly became a world center of commerce, science, literature, and art. The city, my friends, was ancient Baghdad, the city of the 1001 Arabian Nights. The splendor of old Baghdad made it a tempting prize for other less civilized peoples who heard of it. It was not long before ancient Baghdad became a focal point of warfare, involving especially the Mongols and Turks. Rapacious greed destroyed much of the beauty which had once been the hallmark of Baghdad. Constant warfare took its toll, and over the centuries the Saracen Empire decayed in culture and power. The ancient irrigation systems were destroyed, and what was once a Garden of Eden began to turn into a wasteland. In 1516, Baghdad fell permanently to the Turks, and the once magnificent Saracen Empire faded into the sands of a man-made desert. The Baghdad of today is a far cry from that fabled city of old. Modern Baghdad, Iraq, lies on the east bank of the Tigris, across the river from the ruins of the ancient city. Even so, the Baghdad of today does have certain things in common with the Baghdad of old. Modern Baghdad is struggling once again to become a city of science, culture, and power. And like the ancient city, modern Baghdad is faced with a powerful enemy who wants to destroy it. Last month on Sunday, June 7, an aerial strike force of 14 warplanes started their jet engines in the country that calls itself Israel. 8 of them were American F-16s loaded with 1-ton bombs. The other 6 were American F-15s, air superiority fighters to fly along and protect the F-16s from any possible defenders. After the planes took off, they refueled from an aerial tanker for the long war flight they were about to make. For days beforehand, the Israeli planes had been flying training exercises designed to look like the early part of the real raid. As a result, when the war raid was launched on that Sunday last month, it looked at first like just another drill. To maintain the surprise, the Israeli strike force thundered eastward over Jordan at high altitude, mimicking Jordanian Air Force procedures. Next, the Israeli fighter bombers raced into and across northwest Saudi Arabia. Following secret orders from the Pentagon, the American-manned AWACS radar plane patrolling over Saudi Arabia did not report the Israeli intrusion into Saudi airspace. Thanks to this pre-planned cooperation by the United States, the fate of the Israeli target in Baghdad was sealed. The Israeli F-15s and 16s streaked across the Syrian desert of Iraq on the deck below Iraqi radar. As they neared Baghdad, they appeared to rise from nowhere out of the Iraqi countryside as they climbed to begin the attack. At 6:30 p.m. Baghdad time, a hail of 1-ton bombs began raining down on the Iraqi nuclear reactor, which was under construction. Within a matter of minutes, the reactor facility lay in smoking ruins. The Israeli bombing raid into Iraq was a momentous event, the kind of thing we expect to hear about immediately through our electronic news media. Instead, the world remained ignorant of the raid for another full day. Iraq imposed a news blackout about it at first for military reasons. The raid had come without warning or provocation, and the Iraqis were not sure what else Israel might be about to do. The United States government knew about the raid beforehand, but true to form these days, the United States said nothing to the world about what it knew. It was left to Israel itself to publicly announce the raid, which it did in triumphant, glowing terms. Around the world, the reaction was revulsion, shock, and condemnation, and no wonder. For one thing, Israel is trying to justify its acts of war in arrogantly self-righteous terms. Israel complains that Iraq was building a reactor, but wants everyone to forget her own nuclear capability, which is already operational. Israel has always refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which Iraq has signed. The Iraqi nuclear facility has been inspected regularly by the International Atomic Energy Agency during its construction phase, when any violations would be hard to hide. But Israel, which has never once submitted to international inspection, bombed the plant anyway. Beyond these matters of international law and simple justice, Israel has also opened Pandora's box in more ways than one. For one thing, Israel has broken an unwritten taboo against attacks of any kind against nuclear facilities. Now, the nuclear power plants of the world have been made fair game. Military, paramilitary, or terrorist attacks on nuclear power plants will no longer be unthinkable, thanks to the Israeli raid into Iraq. And, my friends, this includes the 72 nuclear power plants now operating right here in the United States. By secretly going along with the Israeli raid, The United States Pentagon is sowing the seeds of nuclear terrorism in our own land. Most important of all, the Israeli raid on Iraq's nuclear plant was a dry run for a far more important raid. I'm referring to the coming Israeli limited nuclear attack on Saudi Arabia's oil fields. The nuclear destruction of Saudi Arabia's oil fields is far from a new idea, as my older listeners already know. I first reported that this was in the works nearly 6 years ago in AUDIO LETTER VI. At that time, the plan revolved around the so-called Sinai Accord involving Egypt, Israel, and the United States. 200 or so Americans were in the Sinai under that agreement, and they were intended to become the focus of an incident to set off war in the area. The actual attack on Saudi oil fields was to be carried out using Cobra helicopter gunships with special air-to-ground atomic missiles. As I detailed at the time, the plan was part of the ongoing joint plan between the long-time rulers of the United States and the Soviet Union for world domination. As originally conceived, the plan called for a nuclear capping of Saudi oil fields sometime in 1976. It was not carried out at that time because the secret alliance between the United States and Russia started coming apart in 1976. The old Rockefeller allies in Russia, the Bolsheviks, were being quietly overthrown there. In their place, a new ruling group were taken over. Russia's new rulers hate the Bolsheviks and have been expelling them from Russia in great numbers. And because America's then secret rulers, the Rockefellers, had supported Bolshevik rule in Russia from 1917, Russia's new rulers were taking defensive actions. The result was the still-secret underwater missile crisis which I reported in the summer of 1976. The collapse of the Rockefeller-Soviet alliance during 1976 and 1977 brought a reprieve for Saudi Arabia. Now America's Bolshevik government has carried over the plan to destroy Saudi oil fields. The plan has been continuously updated and revised for maximum strategic value in the new international situation. I've given reports periodically in my AUDIO LETTERS about the evolving status of this war plan. For 3 years now, the secret plan for Saudi Arabia's nuclear doom has been integrated into a new master strategy for a nuclear war. Behind closed doors, America's Bolshevik military planners have secretly shifted to a first-strike nuclear strategy against Russia. When the Saudi oil fields are capped off in the Israeli nuclear raid, it is intended to set in motion a chain of events. Those events are to culminate in Nuclear War I, with America striking first at Russia. I first reported the broad outlines of this radical new war plan in AUDIO LETTER XXXVII for August 1978. I reported that the first step was to be a supposedly surprise agreement between Israel and Egypt the following month at Camp David. The Camp David hoax went off without a hitch, and the following spring the Egyptian-Israeli treaty was signed in Washington. It was called a peace treaty, but its real purpose was to set the stage for war. My friends, the so-called Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty is just a new, more elaborate version of the Sinai Accord of 6 years ago. The Sinai Accord was held together by American technicians in the Sinai. Likewise, now the Egyptian-Israeli treaty is leading toward a primarily American military force in the Sinai Peninsula due to start April 1982. Now as then, the purpose is to provide a pretext to drag the United States directly into a Middle East war. From there, the conflict is to spread into all-out war. In order to carry out the coming limited nuclear attack on Saudi Arabia, world opinion must be prepared in advance as much as possible. The idea of actually using nuclear weapons must be made less unthinkable to us, and Israel must be provided some excuse for calling Saudi Arabia a deadly threat. In both of these areas, rapid progress is now being made. To make an atomic raid more thinkable when it takes place, Israel has been using the old technique of gradualism. For years, Israeli warplanes have been striking into Lebanon. For a while, there were feeble protests from Washington for public consumption that Israel might be misusing her American weapons. Israel replied that she was attacking a vital threat, the PLO, and just kept it up. After a while, the novelty wore off, and most of us began to just accept it. Next, the Israelis raised the threshold of psychological pain a notch higher. In clear and direct violation of agreements with the Pentagon, Israeli aircraft started dropping cluster bombs on Lebanon. Lebanese villagers, men, women, and children were maimed, dismembered, and killed. When we first heard about it, it sounded inexcusable to many. But after a short while, we forgot about our outrage and went on to other things. Once again, the United States government was careful to do nothing. We had learned to accept something a little worse than before in warfare. Step by step, the Israeli violations of international law and of agreements with the United States have become bolder and bolder. Each time, the United States government has given lip service to law, morality, and the momentary concern of the American public. But each time, Israel has been given the green light again with hardly a pause. It was only a matter of weeks ago that the Israeli Air Force shot down 2 Syrian helicopters over Lebanon using American-made aircraft. The result was a new crisis over Syrian anti-aircraft missiles. With that crisis still unresolved, Israel has now destroyed a nuclear reactor in Iraq, and all the while the United States government continues to let Israel have its own way. Because, my friends, Israel is doing exactly what the Bolshevik military planners here want done. Having accepted Israel's destruction of a nuclear reactor, it's only a short step beyond to accept the use of battlefield nuclear weapons. That still leaves the matter of setting up Saudi Arabia as a credible threat to Israel. The United States is taking care of that problem while pretending to do the Saudis a favor. Early next year, Saudi Arabia is to start taking delivery of a fleet of F-15 fighters, equivalent in many ways to those of Israel. On top of that, the sale of 5 AWACS radar surveillance planes to Saudi Arabia is being considered. The secret purpose of these arms deals with Saudi Arabia is the exact opposite of what is claimed. The United States claims that it wants to improve Saudi Arabia's national security, presumably against Russia. But, my friends, the real purpose is to give Israel the excuse it needs for a preemptive attack on Saudi Arabia. The model for Israel's attack to come against Saudi Arabia was the attack last month against Iraq. Israel claimed that the Iraqi reactor was going to be used someday against Israel. On that basis, Israel described its preemptive surprise attack on Iraq as a defensive action. It was even said that Israel had saved lives by carrying out the surgical attack before the facility was completed. Much the same things will be said and done when the time comes for Israel to attack the Saudi oil fields. The Israelis will act more and more frightened that a Saudi Arabia armed with modern F-15s will someday use them against Israel. As proof, they will quote out of context past Saudi calls for a Muslim jihad to gain control of Jerusalem. And to justify the preemptive nature of the raid, the Israelis will insist that they were forced to strike before or shortly after delivery of the AWACS radar planes. As in the case of the Iraqi nuclear plant, Israel will characterize the Saudi raid as having been designed to spare as many lives as possible. The raid will not strike at heavy population centers, but at the oil fields. In this way, the Israelis will say that they have eliminated the financial basis of the alleged threat to Israel. My friends, when I first began reporting on the plan to cap off Saudi Arabia's oil wells in an Israeli nuclear raid, many people found it unthinkable. That was 5 and 6 years ago. Something called détente was still the official line. Nuclear war between the United States and Russia sounded too far-fetched at that time for most people to even pay attention. And as for Israel bombing Saudi oil fields, even the Saudis themselves could not believe it when they were informed of the plan. How quickly times change! People no longer scoff at the idea that nuclear war is approaching between Russia and America. And now even the Israeli plan to bomb the Saudi oil fields is finally beginning to surface. Last month on June 12, only 5 days after the Israeli raid into Iraq, the New York Daily News carried an article about Israel's oil weapon, quote unquote. The article begins, "Israel has an oil weapon too, one just as powerful as the threat of an embargo by Saudi Arabia or any other Arab state. Israel can bomb the wells." Further on, an aide to Israeli Prime Minister Begin is quoted as saying, "The Saudis can cut off oil to the West, and so can we." Unquote. When Israel decides to bomb the Saudi wells, it will do so in the same way as it bombed the Iraqi nuclear plant. Israel will use its newest and best American jet fighter bombers against Saudi Arabia, just as it did against Iraq. The raid will be launched with absolutely no advance warning, just as was done against Iraq. And just as happened to Iraq, the Israelis will make maximum use of deception in the raid itself. For some 2 years now, the Israeli Air Force has been carrying out mock air raids on northwestern Saudi Arabia. Every so often, Israeli F-15 fighter bombers swoop in unexpectedly across the Saudi border from the Gulf of Aqaba. As often as not, they carry out a simulated attack on the Saudi air base at Tabuk. The frustrated Saudis are falling into a trap by reacting exactly as expected. They are crying out for their own F-15s so that Israel will be unable to continue these brazen overflights. What the Saudis have so far refused to accept is that this is all a ruse, a deceptive trick. One day in 1982, perhaps sooner, Israel plans to launch the real raid. At first, it will look like just another of those mock attacks on the Saudi air base. But when the Israeli jets pass over the base, they will not turn back, as in the past. Instead, they will thunder overhead in a straight line toward the Persian Gulf. Disappearing into the undefended interior of Saudi Arabia, they will disperse to elude further detection. As in the case of last month's raid into Iraq, the American-manned AWACS plane will conveniently fail to locate the Israeli attackers in time. Within 2 hours, nuclear fireballs will cap off the Saudi oil wells. The world will be in a state of shock. The industrial heart of Europe and Japan will be crippled, but this will be only the beginning. Bolshevik America will finally be able to put its gasoline rationing plan into operation. The country will be put on a wartime basis. Our youth will be drafted, and our country will be made to accept this first open act of nuclear warfare since World War II. Israel has paved the way for all this with its destruction of the Iraqi nuclear reactor. With its attack on the ancient Garden of Eden, Israel has begun leading the world into the valley of the shadow of death.